You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
PackersTalk.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
How you doing, sir? What can I do for you? And I told him I need you to bring back something.
Football back. We in the crowd screaming out football back. It's kickoff time. We in love with the money. These chickens shaking they pom-pom. Shelly, this my honeys. We yelling football back.
Welcome into the two-pack. There is two of us. We talk about the Packers. That's why it is called that. The two are Alex Patakis, that's me, and Nick Bornheimer, that's him. You can get us at our Twitter handles. We've recovered from the Packers' loss to the Arizona Cardinals divisional playoff weekend. Was a rough one, but overall, I think I'm holding up a lot better than last year because they weren't really good enough to win the Super Bowl anyway. So it was a fun game. Obviously, there's disappointment, but hey, you know what? I feel like I'm doing pretty well.
Yeah, I think the sheer shock after the Larry Fitz overtime bonanza left me speechless for I would say a solid 5 to 10 minutes where I just couldn't look or like look at anything aside from I probably didn't see anything. I think I blacked out and not from the alcohol.
Yeah. Sure. I lost my voice in the game. I was a little bit like crushed on Saturday and a little bit Sunday, one of those where you don't really want to watch football that much after
but
that.
Just but. Like you said, last year's team was going to win the Super Bowl, right? Like, I feel like everybody thought that.
Yeah.
They had already beaten that Patriots team earlier in the season. This team, as slighted as the Panthers get, like, I think the Panthers were going to crush the Packers next week or this week. Right?
Probably. So we waited until later in the week to do this. I didn't really have a voice to do it on Tuesday, despite at one point having talked for a living. And I have a really, really hard time rebounding from games where you're yelling. But in particular where you're – I mean, I could even have a night out where I could be at a loud bar – and be, you know, very, very chatty and have my voice be strained the next day. So the amount of times that there were, like, fly up in the air, spill your beer, and scream at the top of your lung moments in that game.
Us trying to high-five each other across the crowded bar. But it,
in the positive way and in a negative way is why my voice is gone. Also forgive the sounds of the city that so famously doesn't sleep behind us. It's very – I will – tell you, we appreciate you putting up with some of those things throughout the course of the year. If anyone has noticed, it is very hard to find peace and quiet.
Anyone hasn't noticed is probably the
it's,
better statement.
It's very hard to find peace and quiet in this city, so we roll on anyway because what's a couple horns and sirens and crazy people yelling to deter us from talking about what we want to talk about. To me, there's not much sense in dwelling on the game. It's over with. Everyone, I think, has kind of moved on to next year. I know one of the main talking points after the fact, and it's still being written about, was whether or not the Packers should have gone for two. And that's a conversation I'm willing to have because that one, to me, seems like it's broader than just that game. Because I don't think there's a lot of NFL coaches who would have gone for it in that spot. Almost none, probably. I mean,
Tomlin maybe comes into the conversation just because he started the season.
Sure.
But
going for two all the time and going for it on fourth down very frequently and they kind of having a philosophy that in most cases they stuck to, but, you know, still not to the point where you could open yourself up to too much criticism. I don't think Belichick – I mean, we could say – that Belichick would have the stones to do it, but I don't know that he does. But the reason I want to talk about it is because, I mean, after like a lot of deliberating and reading and thinking, I've kind of come around to the side that the Packers should have gone for it. And I know most people's reason is, well, you're not, you know, you're on the road against a superior team. You know, you're lucky to have been in that spot. This is kind of it. Go for it. And I don't think that that's, you know, I think McCarthy's thought is, with what just happened, if we get the ball first in overtime, we're scoring, right? Like, that's their mentality. But I think I've come around because if you're just playing the percentages, which I feel like coaches, I mean, NFL teams are really smart. They have to have these numbers somewhere. If you're playing the percentages, the right play in that spot is to go for two.
If you're playing the percentages, but another statistic to throw out there, they moved the yard mark where you kick the extra point from back, and early on in the season, through the first two games, 9 total extra points were missed. In 2014, 8 the entire season were missed. So a lot of teams early on were going for two for that reason, which is just another variable to factor in. I think when you're hindsight's 2020, and it's so easy to look back afterwards and say, okay, the Packers, because they lost, if they would have gone for two and gotten it, obviously that's it. That's the game. If Packers offense gets that ball and the weird coin that didn't flip doesn't go the Cardinals' way, like, the conversation isn't even had.
I get that. But what I'm saying, this is what I'm interested in. Aside from the percentages, and I guess I'll throw those out there. I shouldn't just say playing the percentages. I read Benjamin Morris at 538.com, all numbers-based stuff. And it's close. But basically, the two-point conversion success rate since 2001 is 47.2%, right? The extra point success rate, obviously far higher, since they've moved it back at 94.3%. But so they do a little math. Basically, it's your expected win percentage in overtime as the road team, right? That's at 45%.
Okay.
Your win percentage, or excuse me, your percentage of converting a two-point conversion is at 47.2. So they factor in a few different variables. They adjusted it for team strength, the two-point conversion success rate, that is. Like, basically, most comparable situations, it's terrible radio to just kind of manipulate these numbers, or terrible podcasting, whatever it might be. But basically, it boils down to a 42.6% win percentage in overtime, having not gone for it, and a 48.8% to convert the two-point conversion. That's adjusting for team strength and for the exact situation, not just two-point conversions like, you know, like you were saying, that don't necessarily matter, right? Or really, really bad road teams that are down by 20-something, you know, that are just going for two for the hell of it. That's not a comparable situation. So it's close. But what I'm saying is, like, this is why I think it's interesting, because I think obviously there would be a ton of critics if Mike McCarthy goes for it in that spot and they don't get it. And it would be impossible not to be disappointed and to be angry. But I also think that we would, like, a day or two removed, the same people who are saying he should have gone for it, because these aren't the angry mob that follows after every loss. These are the people that are kind of more well-reasoned, would still support. I think we're at a point where enough people can evaluate a decision independent of the result. And I think you and I would be sitting here.
I think you're giving Packers fans too much
credit.
Well,
I know, but that's the thing. Mike McCarthy doesn't feed into Packers fans.
Yeah.
And he shouldn't. And if there's any coach that should get away with it, it's him.
Look, I'm playing devil's advocate here, but I agree with you. I think that based on the situation, going for two there after that gut punch that the Cardinals just suffered, that's the move. You don't give them time to reevaluate the situation and calm down. Like, the defense is clearly out of sorts there.
Yeah, agreed. Well, and there was a ton of time in between because they were reviewing it. So you could easily get your play. Like, I don't think anyone would have been that shocked if they come back from commercial
and they're wind up in the two-point in an offensive set.
And everyone gets excited and some people are pulling their hair out and saying, how could you do that? But, like, if you just take your emotions out of it, and I tell you, that a coach goes for two in that spot. And this is a coach of a team with the best quarterback in the game, okay? The most efficient quarterback in the game. Maybe not like this season, but just that guy, okay? League superstar, defending MVP, hyper efficient, always makes the right play.
That's
a franchise with no owner, no crazy emotional owner who's going to make any type of decision that really puts your job in jeopardy. Maybe the most level-headed general manager with the longest leash that some people are complaining about. Like it seems like to me the only risk, and this sounds really, really stupid, the only risk in that spot is losing the game. Like, but isn't that what you want? Like, isn't that just like, okay, I am in a situation where the ball is in the hands of Aaron Rodgers and I can win it or lose it right here. You're in that same situation in overtime, except the consequence, if you don't convert on a fourth down or a third down, isn't loss, automatic loss.
Are we talking about, are you raising this question and we're just looking at the scope of this game or the scope of the NFL altogether? Because
look, there's coaches that never go for it. And I think some of those coaches are like, if you're the coach of the Cleveland Browns, why the hell would you go for it? They blow through coaches like crazy. But if you're a guy with legit job security and a person that no one would blame you for having faith in,
I think remove that from the situation, because McCarthy goes for it there and doesn't. His job's not on the line regardless.
No, but that's what I'm saying. So his job's not like, so the coach whose job isn't on the line, win or lose in that game, who all the smart people around him would say, you know what, it's the right choice, or you know what, we understand where that choice is coming from, is the coach that can afford to take that risk.
But maybe he thought,
and that's why, like, what coaches would do it. Belichick, Tomlin, they've been at their places longer than ever because they have success, and no one's kicking them out. And Mike McCarthy is in that boat. He's, like him or hate him, like, he's in that realm of coach. Like, he is someone who could afford to make that choice.
Sure, but is he the coach that makes that choice? Has he historically been the coach that makes that choice?
I mean, he has some nads with the surprise onside kicks and going for it on fourth down, but rarely do you see a coach make that decision in that big of a spot.
Because you're starting a brand new, we can get into a conversation about how the overtime rules in the NFL are terrible, because I think that I could go off on a tangent about that. How do you not afford the opposing team an offensive set if the other team goes down and just beats up the defense? Like, I don't think that's fair. I don't think that necessarily you should take the college game or the overtime system for what you will, but at least give them the whole 15 minutes.
Okay, I don't disagree with that, but to change the rule just because of this game seems like...
It's not just because of this game. Well, it's happened and time again.
It's happened to this team time and time again. But like, if this situation happens again next year, and Mike McCarthy did go for it and didn't get it, and he had the inferior team and the best player in the sport and a ton of job security, and five times now, his season has ended on the final play of the game, whether it be an overtime or whatever. His playoff run has ended on the final play of the game. If he goes for it, can you blame him? Like, all I'm trying to say is, factor in those losses as well. If there's one coach in the NFL that you could justify making that call, it's him. And if I'm him and I get the question afterwards, whoever leads off post game, Mike, why'd you go for it? My season's ended four times on the final play of the game. Five now.
No. If you're going to do this, you're doing McCarthy voice.
Well, you know, it was the right football decision. We evaluated everything during the timeout, and we thought that Aaron was the guy to trust as opposed to whatever. I don't know what he's going to say. But okay, so anyway.
He gets you every time.
Yeah, I know. I lose track of what I'm saying because I'm focusing so much on doing the voice.
But it doesn't matter.
I'd say, you know what, Jason? I'm not in the mood for drama tonight. No, I would say, my season's ended on the last play of overtime five times. I didn't want that to happen again. We got the best player in the sport. So we trusted our guys to get it. We didn't get it. Next question. Boom. That's it. That's all you say.
And anyone who wants to argue that is play the result guy. And it sounds like I'm play the result guy because they ended up losing. And obviously, if they won, there wouldn't be that many people questioning the call. But I'm telling you, smart people would still question the call because people are still questioning Bruce Arians for being so aggressive. And his team won. Like, I'm not angry. I sound like I'm angry. I'm interested in the psychology of why it's like taboo to go for it there.
It's not necessarily as taboo as it once was. So if it's a week six game and the Packers are on the road at St. Louis and they're in that exact same scenario, are you this fired up?
No, no, no. But it's your season on the line.
But that's what makes you so. That's what's playing into this.
But I think that's what makes that. I think in some way that's what makes him less prone to go for it. And it's weird because
you should potentially be more prone to go.
Coaches
for
those types of organizations, they probably don't listen. When they say they don't listen to the outside, they probably don't. Right? Like, do you think Mike McCarthy really cares and factors in what like media types are saying or fans are saying?
No, but I know he hears what they're saying.
But doesn't it seem like the psychology of, oh, I can't take that risk, I got to play it safe so that I'm not the guy everyone's pointing fingers with after, is somehow like the genesis of it is somehow like knowing that I'm the guy who's going to be crushed because we love to wake up on Sunday morning in this case and just crush McCarthy for taking a risk that mathematically is the right risk?
Okay, I think that he... mathematics aside, I think he felt in his gut that the right move was to play in overtime. I think he trusted the defense, and you listen to the postgame.
And the defense has been so good.
He trusted the defense. Right. Who's going to...
I trusted it.
Who's going to assume that Sam Shields is going to over-pursue that aggressively and let Larry Fitzgerald cut back, and then a play that Arians had in the back pocket for 2 years, that little Larry Fitz shovel pass.
Yeah.
Like... whatever.
I call bull on that, right?
I don't know. I thought it was pretty cool.
No. Great play. I've had it in my pocket for 2 years.
Oh, yeah, just the yeah, he could have been lying. Who knows?
The dramatics. Like, yeah, I've been waiting for the right time. Like, come on.
I just...
that's okay, in everyone's playbook.
But we haven't even talked about that. We trusted that defense. I trusted that defense that if Arizona was going to get the ball first, you trusted him to hold him to three at least to give Aaron Rodgers a shot. At least I did.
They played a hell of a game.
That's why I think Mike McCarthy shouldn't be chastised for...
I'm not chastising him. I'm you know what I'm doing? I'm like walking over to him and like patting him on the back and being like, you know what, Mike? Bleep the haters. Like, you could afford... I'm not...
I know, he could afford
to do that.
I believe that. I genuinely think either way you look at it, you're okay. But sometimes the math or the statistics don't necessarily factor in because the defense had... held Arizona to, what did they score in the second half? They had the fluky touchdown.
Yeah, that was it, I think.
Maybe. No, it was 10-0.
I'm too sad to look at a box score.
Honestly. I know, we're too far removed. Because we weren't supposed to do this. We weren't supposed to dwell on the game on this podcast. We were supposed to look...
well, no, I'm doing it just... to me, that's the most interesting part. This is insane to say. On a final drive that had... a guy who hasn't done a thing all year.
101 receiving yards.
Have more yards on the drive.
I love all the people who ask, like, wait, there's something wrong with box score. That doesn't even make sense. How could you have... well, come on.
Yeah.
Like, you don't think you can accrue a loss on a play?
In a game that the Packers had their quarterback about 2 yards from running out of his own end zone on 4th and 20 with his back to the field and with 50-something seconds left on the clock.
God, how amazing is Aaron Rodgers?
2 plays later... he throws a Hail Mary touchdown for the second time this year. They go to overtime. An improbable play from Larry Fitzgerald and a shovel pass to win it in a walk-off. And somehow, none of those things are as interesting as the actual decision to kick an extra point.
In your mind, yes.
No, they're not interesting. Everything else was dumb luck. This is the one thing where like the variable could be controlled. Like, you can't control that Demarius Randall, like, great coverage, deflected a pass and just pops out of the hand. Stupid. Of Michael Floyd, you can't control the fact that Jeff Janis caught that Hail Mary. You know, there's not a lot to analyze there. It's like Aaron Rodgers made... I mean, if you want to analyze anything, question how many guys could actually reach the end zone in that spot. What's the answer to that? On that exact Hail Mary, replicate that exact situation, rolling out to your left for a right-handed quarterback with almost no time. How many guys can reach the end zone? Cam Newton?
Yeah, but Cam Newton doesn't... I don't know that Cam Newton can make that throw that accurately if he's not set. I don't think that there's anyone in the
Derek
NFL
Carr,
who can,
right?
Who can
he
do
has
that.
A pretty great arm strength, but I don't know.
He put it where Janis started tracking the ball at the 10-yard line.
Yeah,
what a play by him, too.
Yeah, it was insane.
Janis is the type of guy who, if you're going to ask him to be a solid, fundamental... I'm gonna run a pristine route running or a wide receiver. Maybe Janis isn't your guy, but if you're looking at just raw, insane athletic ability and just like the stuff that's indescribable. Like he had done it time and time again this year.
Yeah,
I like all the conversation after the game. Like, well, should have been starting this guy. Who's this Jameis guy? Why was he not playing all year? No. Come on.
Yeah, give me a break. I mean, yeah, it's easy to say when you go to desperation mode and heat.
When Randall Cobb is coughing up blood in the hospital.
Yeah, man.
But he's all right, by the way.
I mean, it's the off season. No, yes,
I'm as a human being, I'm okay. Yeah. Okay,
sorry, that was my dark side. Yes, all right. So I want to get into some other things, some of the McCarthy related, but not going for two related. I guess we spent enough time on that. I'm still fascinated by it, and
I think the entire psychology of it is super interesting. And I think that as the NFL shifts and as analytics play more and more in, you'll see more of that.
It's just the fear. You know, it's so funny that these guys are so brave, like what they do for a living, and then it's just in that moment they are so scared. Like, that's what's fascinating to me. It's like, got to play the safe route. Like, I'm coaching a game for a living. It's not life. I'm not, like, I don't have my hand on the trigger, like, to start a nuclear war. No, it's a game.
I know, but let me tell you why I think a head coach, and then we'll completely change the subject. But I think a head coach opts more often than not to play a sequence of downs versus one play, because you don't play football in one play.
Agreed. You 1,000%.
You coach a game based on a game plan, and it should never ever come down to one play in a coach's mind.
And I totally understand that, and I think most people feel that way, but like it's wrong. It's the wrong way to think, because more things can go wrong than can on one single, like, for instance, the first play of overtime. You know, it's like, wouldn't you rather, and the other part is, and you could say coin toss, no coin toss, I trust the defense. Like, either way, there's still a chance that the Cardinals get the ball and score right away. There's no chance that you aren't at least going to have an opportunity to line up for a play to win, because you're doing it, you know, like, it's just, it's weird. But anyway, all right, let's get into some of the post-game reaction. Then we're going to look forward a little bit too, and we're going to start something new that will kind of carry through the offseason into next season, that will actually hold us each accountable as well. So since the game has ended till present day as we record this here, we've had a couple of things happen. Let's start with the coaches being let go, assistant coaches being let go. Sam Gash, running backs coach, gone. Jerry Fontenot, tight ends coach, who Aaron Rodgers thought very highly of, and many people think very highly of.
And had been with the organization for a while.
For a long time. I think since McCarthy's first year. Gone.
All in one swift motion.
We talked about whether or not there'd be staff changes. I still think there's time for Clements to no longer be there, but I don't think he's necessarily going to get fired like these guys did. So one guy coached the position group that had an underachieving Eddie Lacy, and another guy get cut for disciplinary reasons in Alonzo Harris. The other guy coached the position group that had Andrew Corliss, who wasn't healthy, Richard Rodgers, who's been meh, so-so, although his year wasn't terrible.
If you look at his numbers, it's been the most productive year since, well, he caught the most touchdowns since Bubba Franks.
Yeah. He's good at catching touchdowns, and he's really good at that sideline third down grab for like 8 yards when you need seven.
Yeah, and he was just like, he was a mad guy, right. whatever guy.
So he's been mad. So your thoughts on this, because I think it's very easy to just assume that these guys weren't coached well, but it's also easy to say, well, they're not coaching a whole bunch of talent because one guy was overweight and also had to miss games for disciplinary reasons. And the other position group just, I mean, there's nothing special about this group of tight ends. And there's, I think you could take a league average tight end and plug him in and he would start over most of these guys.
I don't know that it was fair to let Fontenot go based, just like you said, based on the talent. And he hadn't been the, I was trying to look up, he hadn't been the tight end coach
For his
entire tenure with the Packers, because I was going to say, like, what, they hadn't had any tight end talent since J. Mike went down, and like, why pull the trigger right now? But those are two. It makes me think, like, okay, there wasn't a tight end who could really truly get open. And you could make the argument that Rich Rod got open on his dumpy little outslow the guy routes every once in a while. But were these guys just fall guys because McCarthy had to make some type of coaching decision? Or is this a move that McCarthy really felt, McCarthy and Thompson and et cetera, and Murphy felt was a necessary move to make? Because it's puzzling because both these guys had established themselves. Well, Gash hadn't been there for a while, but again, like, the talent just wasn't there. And Capers had been, the Fire Capers hashtag had been one that was transcendent of just the Packers for a long time. And now the defense gets it in gear and we don't hear anything about it. Like, it just feels like these guys, like, there were bigger systemic issues than the tight end coach and the running backs coach. But again, I'm not in the organization. What did McCarthy say post game? Like, oh, we thank them for their contributions to the organization. We thank him and his wife. I think he said that for both guys.
It's got to be a really hard decision for McCarthy. I mean, this is Gash's second year with the team. That's the thing. You know, when things are going right, it's easy to say, oh, that guy's doing a great job. When things aren't going so well, it's always easy to blame the coaches. But, I mean, I think most people would agree it's execution. And I think most people would agree that it's talent. I think it's more justifiable for Gash, right? Because you could chalk that one up potentially to discipline.
To discipline and not getting Lacy in the shape that he's supposed to
but
be.
But how
or
much
not,
of that is on Eddie Lacy, though?
Probably, I mean, not probably, definitely a good chunk of it. But the whole curfew thing and, it's weird to have the coach be the fall guy because you're not going to let your franchise running back go out the door. And you
sure, like, okay, so if you put one of the best running back coaches of all time, right?
Okay.
You put him on the Packers staff. Is drunk Eddie Lacy at 2 a.m. not eating Chinese food? Like,
I don't know. I don't know how disciplinarians work or what, if there's a particular method of coaching that
the smoking gun, Eddie Lacy's timeline. Like, just like, how funny is that?
How funny is it seeing the pictures of him, like, his rookie year in training camp and then the fat Eddie picture where he's 1,000 pounds, his profile is just gigantic.
Well, then going back and reading tweets from back in his time in Alabama of, like, that are time stamped, like at like 1 a.m., 2 a.m.,
yeah.
Like that Chinese food though. Or like, I'm about to get this food real quick. Like, how, like.
Just like you and I, our metabolism's caught up with us.
And oh,
I'm
guilty of it.
Yeah.
Last weekend was a rough. It took my stomach a week to recover from last weekend. But I'm not playing NFL football, man. Like,
yeah.
But what I'm saying is, I don't know that you could put like the most respected. You could put Jim Brown as their running backs coach. Like, is Eddie Lacy, like, you know, is he? Are his habits, like your habits and my habits, just going to go away because like some guy has some magic powers telling him like you have to take this seriously? He played for Nick Saban. Here's the thing. He played for Nick Saban when he was tweeting those things.
And Nick Saban is the one who allegedly called Coach McCarthy and said, this is how you have to handle this guy. I don't know. So
I feel like we segue very easily into the Mike McCarthy calling out Eddie Lacy thing, by the way.
Right. Let me just say one more thing. So last year, you remember the coaching change that was made. Not Zook, their special teams coordinator from last year. What was his name? Slocum. Sean Slocum.
Yeah.
He got axed, and everyone kind of saw that coming. Like, that one made sense.
Because that unit was atrocious.
That unit was atrocious.
And it was a huge coaching gaffe that their season basically. Two huge special teams gaffes that their season ended on.
Yep.
That they lost the NFC Championship on.
So these two, they're not as justifiable to me. Fontenot had been with the Packers since 2006, on McCarthy's first season, and jumped around. And he moved to tight ends coach in 2012 and replaced McAdoo, who then became the quarterbacks coach. And by the way, Ben McAdoo, the McCarthy tree continues to blossom.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing what being the court, like, it's so funny too. It's like, this is what I mean about players, because now McAdoo gets a head coaching job as a result.
Right.
Be the coach to get Eli Manning to throw fewer interceptions in the past two seasons since you've taken over as the coordinator. Never mind the fact that those past two seasons, there's been one other common denominator that wears number 13 and is the best player at his position in the sport, arguably.
You're right.
In Odell Beckham. But no, I do agree. The McCarthy tree, like, it's got at least some branches now. I mean, the Thompson tree is way better than the McCarthy tree right now.
Yeah. And so, Philbin doesn't look too hot, but
no.
Where did he end up?
Didn't the Giants sign him?
Yeah, I think coaching with McAdoo. I think that's right. And Doug Peterson gets a head coaching job too. That's not anybody's coach. Yeah, it's just.
I guess that's technically the Andy Reid. I mean, that's an extension of the. That's like a sub tree branch thing of the Mike Holmgren.
All right,
Colts tree.
We're getting sidetracked. What do you? So McCarthy's call out of Lacey afterwards is.
So we have that soundbite.
Yeah, I think we have it. Let's throw it over real quick.
Well, Andy Lacey, he's got a lot of work to do. You know, his offseason last year was clearly not good enough. And he never recovered from it. I mean, he can't play at the weight he was at this year.
That was totally impromptu, by the way. We didn't really have the soundbite.
Maybe we could get it if we wanted to.
But that was way better.
That would require some amount of work.
So
right?
That's mean McCarthy. You don't see a lot of mean McCarthy unless he's being mean to reporters post-game. Like, he usually doesn't attack his players.
Or fire his assistants.
I know.
Like, yeah, is this like the new guy? Is this...
McCarthy trying to be Mr. Nice Guy, give somebody else a chance calling plays, and then just rips the play sheet out of his hands and goes, I'm calling plays from this point moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, is anything he said unfair?
No. Right? It's not unfair.
No.
Eddie Lacy is fat.
Did anything that he said about Eddie Lacy probably not come up and be was not communicated to Eddie Lacy directly?
Absolutely not.
In their exit interview before he went to the media?
Oh, I don't know. Probably.
No, the exit interview was before that.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, it's 100% fair because he probably told Lacey that first. Like, if he just blindsides him and just wants to throw him under the bus to the media, that's fine.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
but like, that's kind of douchey. Like, he could still do it, but it's, you know, it's a little, that's not the way you do things. But I guarantee you, he said it and communicated it in a much harsher way to Eddie Lacey himself.
And then fired Sam Gash.
Yeah, like, that's the cherry on top. So you go ahead and call him and apologize, Eddie. And think twice. Think about who else's job is riding.
And call Alonzo Harris and apologize,
yeah,
too.
Think about who else's job is riding on your back before you decide to... No, but I mean, look, Lacey's going to get blamed for a lot of different things. He still had a huge play in that game where he ran out of gas and clearly couldn't outrun anybody.
Yeah.
But we knew this was going to be a thing, though, right? I mean, we knew, like, at the beginning of this year when he wasn't healthy and then he was benched and, like... We knew that there was some type of legitimate thing there, like whether it's a motivational thing or a don't take it for granted thing. Like, that's something they're going to have to deal with. But I'll tell you what's going to be the ultimate motivator. Money, right? Because at some point, Eddie Lacy's going to have to play to earn another contract.
Is this the last year of his contract?
Yes, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah. So, like, the Eddie Lacy we get in 2016... I'm willing to bet it's going to be the best version of Eddie Lacy.
What if Eddie Lacy comes into OTAs just cut up, like lost 50 pounds in the offseason and has like a 2,000 yard season?
I don't
want
to lose 50 pounds. Well, like,
what if Eddie Lacy's 300 pounds right now? What if he just continues to gain weight? I have no idea.
What do you – okay, here's a fun game. So I know that they weigh in and they got to make a certain weight. First off, the heights and weights that guys are playing at are total BS. I mean, you can make a weigh-in. Just fighters will tell you this all the time. I don't know that football players put their bodies through this because it's extremely unhealthy. But, like, what do you think Eddie Lacy right now, today, actually weighs?
Okay.
What's his listed weight?
So he's listed at 234 pounds.
Okay. What do you think
he's,
right now
he's
walking
over,
around
at? I think he's over 250, right?
Over 250?
I don't know.
Maybe.
I think he is.
I don't know, though, because he's really short, though. That's the thing. Like, he's not particularly tall. He's, like, normal person height.
Hold on.
I mean,
he's probably not over 250.
I don't know 250, but I'm going 245. I'm going that's probably 10 pounds nice in the Lacy direction.
So in 2015, he weighed in at 234 pounds, which is 3 pounds heavier than he was at the NFL scouting combine in 2013.
And look, a lot of that is muscle because he's a very muscular guy. Like, it's not like we're sitting here trying to call him fat, but like what they want him to do. Didn't Le'Veon Bell lose like 20 to 30 pounds? Le'Veon Bell was a big bruising back.
Do you remember when Le'Veon Bell, he either Instagrammed or tweeted his body fat percentage and it was like 2%?
He got it down to a single, yes, it was in single digits. And if you look at his body, and I know he's rehabbing and stuff like that now because Vontaze Burfict,
he's got like a 45
ruined
pack.
His leg. And then ruined Ben Roethlisberger's shoulder and then ruined Antonio Brown's head. Vontaze Burfict really did his job. While being dirty, he did his job. But I know that like it's possible for a guy to be pretty good and then show up, lose a bunch more weight, and be better.
And I think Le'Veon Bell, same draft class, by the way. First running back taken off the board in that draft class.
Yeah.
Or was he first, or was it Giovanni Bernard? I think Bell was first. I know that it's possible, and it can be impactful, right? So if you're Lacy, like, you've been warned, you've basically been told you need to do that. Like, and you're in a situation where now, if you don't perform this year, you're probably not going to be brought back to play with one of the best quarterbacks in the game and play in important, meaningful games. Like, you can go play for the Jaguars if you don't show up that way. So that's the ultimatum. That to me is the one thing that can motivate guys. It's the money.
I'm reading a Domofsky article from back in late October of 2015. And he says, early in training camp, a person familiar with the weigh-in said Lacy was at 242.
Ooh, my 245 guess is. Oh, that's in camp?
Yeah, which I think.
You might not be far off.
And then here's a quote from Lacy, according to this article from Rob. When I get on the scale, it's like, hey, cool, Lacy said. If I'm not, I'm pretty sure I'll hear from the guy upstairs.
I mean, who knows if any of that factored in when he was benched.
Jeez.
How much does it suck? Like, if you're someone, like, and these are athletes and they're confident and their bodies are their means to a living. So obviously he's not, like, a terribly unhealthy person, right? But, like, imagine if you just had to sit there and answer questions from a bunch of fat reporters and have your fat head coach tell you that you're fat about being fat. Like, he's a professional athlete.
That's such a funny way to look at it, the hypocrisy among the people. Like, think about how the Skip Baylesses of,
like, should
the world.
Mike McCarthy be allowed to sit there on a podium and tell someone that they're fat?
No. I don't know.
But see, it's a different precedent.
Mike McCarthy's not making millions of dollars to be in shape.
No, right. And I guarantee you he's out of shape because of his profession.
But I do admit there is some profound hypocrisy there. Where there's a bunch of fat reporters huddled around him, like, is weight an issue, Eddie?
Yeah, like, look at you, on, bro. Like, what's, come on, dude. Like, get your shit together, Eddie. Like, what's going on, man? That's funny.
Poor Eddie. Do we feel bad for Eddie at all? Or do
I
we
do,
have
yes.
no sympathy for him?
I do feel a little bit bad for him. Because I think I always try to stop and remember that he is a kid from a place where it's very warm, where he doesn't usually have to. He's said publicly that he hates driving in the cold. He hates being in the cold. He's got asthma, which makes it harder to play in the cold. And I guarantee you, like, those Wisconsin winters, man, they take a toll on everybody. And they're taking a toll on this kid from the South who's just trying to find, like, some happiness in scoring touchdowns and eating Chinese food at 2 a.m. Like
watching,
any normal human
and watching Happy
like
Feet. He loves watching Pixar movies.
And you know, it's you have to adjust. I who knows what's actually going on? But, like, just because he's making a lot of money doesn't mean he doesn't deserve sympathy. And I know that's the last person that, like, the hard ass, like, this is the NFL guy is going to have empathy for, is the guy who's making millions of dollars to play a game. But, like, I'm just saying, it's, you know, not everyone has 2% body fat. There are guys who have real problems in that. 242 back in October, you said that was?
That's what somebody said he was at weigh-ins. Like
a source
camp.
Close to the yeah. situation who had to lie to make sure he made weight so that they could make him active.
Right. Like, and, like, who was a source who chose not to be named in the
yeah.
in the article.
And why would you? Unbelievable. All right, we're going to try something out, something new. You ready for it?
I think so.
I'm excited. And it's we do so many hot takery things, and everything's hot or everything's not, but just one more. So this actually stems from a conversation I was having with a good friend of ours who's also your roommate. We call him Kitty, and I actually intend to have him on this podcast at some point because he's an interesting guy.
And can speak to some of Eddie Lacy's weight issues, because he used to be Big Cat but became Kitty when he shed a ton of weight.
Sure, yes, he could speak to that, I guess. And yeah, but anyway, he and I were having a conversation, and I was talking about one of my biggest frustrations with the sports radio, sports media industry. And one of those, and I remember saying this back when, you know, I was more entrenched, I guess you could say, in that stuff. I remember I always said it's one of the things that just drives me absolutely bonkers is that you could take wild swings at anything. Like, you could have your take and you could just – you could shoot – I mean, you could swing out of your shoes Carlos Gomez style, and if you're wrong, no one's going to remember. It's never going to matter. And it's not like I'm asking like, oh, we need to hold you accountable with pitchforks and come to your door and say you were wrong, like shame.
Just throwing shit at the wall and hoping something sticks.
But right, because what happens then is none of that matters. And then once you're going to swing so hard and you're going to connect and that ball is going to go 500 feet and you're going to be the first person to tell everyone
about
it.
And you can puff out your chest and say, look at me, I was out in front of this.
And it's annoying because the answer could never be I'm on the fence or I don't know or I don't feel strongly one way or another. Like we always – you have to fabricate an opinion. And somehow that evolved into Hot Take Quarterly, which I want to do because I think what we should do if we're going to say those things and we're going to feel that way and we're going to jokingly poke around and give hot takes from week to week, I think we should hold ourselves accountable. So once a quarter – and yes, in our 2016 fiscal year,
sure.
we are going to time out some takes. We're going to take some swings while recognizing that this is ridiculous, and we'll probably make fun of ourselves come next quarter. So it times out pretty well because we'll make our hot take quarterly quarter one prediction now, and then quarter two will come right after the draft, and our predictions will be about the draft. Then we'll make one from the draft that will basically be able to be proven wrong or right by training camp and then training camp for the season and so on and so forth. And then we'll kind of reflect on them because we fully intend to do this podcast, hopefully
not
with buses and ambulances and everything driving by making noise, but for the whole year, eventually in better circumstances. So what I want to do is the first edition of it. And months from now, we'll bring it back and we'll just either laugh at ourselves or we'll say, you know what, maybe we got lucky there. So, it's prediction time.
Okay.
And it's not just prediction, but it's your opinion as well. And I don't need a player, but what the Packers do in the first round of the draft.
Okay.
So hot take quarterly.
Okay.
Draft hot take.
Sure.
Because you can't make the draft hot take when it's draft time, because at draft time, we want to know if you were right or wrong.
Yeah. So.
Take a wild swing, man.
Okay.
Like all the people who said afterwards, oh, sources close to my situation said Ted Thompson, someone who works for Ted Thompson or actually once worked for him but was kind of close to him was at the East-West Shrine game and actually stopped and talked to this guy for
right.
a minute, and now the Packers are interested.
Yep. Okay, let's get out in front of it. All right. So what do you think, in your humble opinion, was the most glaring need for the Packers all season?
Mine?
Yes. Just answer that question. One-word answer.
Receiver.
Yes. So, I agree with you. Ted Thompson doesn't draft receivers in the first round.
Right. You're right.
So, I would say that could potentially get addressed. And it's not... It's either that or linebacker, or middle linebacker, because there was such a glaring need, and he said post-game that McCarthy did... said post-game that Clay was moving back to the outside because that's his natural position. But I think he goes receiver first round and just stays away from linebacker.
You do?
I do. I'm not going to say he's going to trade up, but we were talking with Wes Hockowitz earlier on in the season, and he kind of said the same thing. He said, you know what? This isn't the Ted Thompson we're accustomed to, but maybe he bites the bullet and finally does it, because Jordy will be back. James Jones, you figure. Grandy wants to remain with the Packers until he retires. He's just another year older and another year slower. And Jeff Janis is who knows. And Everett Ears is who knows. And Randall Cobb is... he didn't have a good year this year, right? He just didn't.
No.
So they need a wide receiver. They need another target. And let's say McCarthy does it. That's my slightly hot take.
Okay. Mine's the same, so...
Oh, nice!
Doesn't make it to be that interesting. I know that everyone says now that, you know, this Clay Matthews moving back outside, which was another development that we learned from McCarthy, is, it opens up the door for them to draft, finally, a guy to fix the inside linebacker position. I don't believe that. And I think we've actually discussed this on this podcast before, We've had the conversation about whether or not, you know, Clay Matthews is missed that much at outside linebacker, whether or not the Packers really value inside linebacker. We all want a Luke Kuechly, but how many Luke Kuechlys are there in the league?
One. His name is Luke Kuechly.
Yeah. Give me the guy that you feel is an impact player at that position, not named Luke Kuechly. Everyone wants one, right? How many other teams have one? And how many other teams do you really notice that it makes a huge difference? Like, what I'm saying is I'm not convinced that that's an impact position. I think that's a position that
an impact player on the Panthers happens to be at and makes impact plays, but it's not.
That you can plug guys in and you could still have a very, very good defense there. Like, and I'm not saying, like, none of them are worth anything. I'm just saying getting the guy who's great at that position is very hard because there's not that many, and it's not a premium position. Like, you can name a million pass rushers or impact guys, right?
Yeah.
Like, who's the next? Who's next behind Luke Kuechly? Like, Patrick Willis was one, right? But he retired. And it looked like Navarro Bowman might be one, but he broke all his legs.
Yeah.
And he was
left legless.
Right. Like, the Niners had, like, a plethora of them. Like, Chris Borland even was, like, picking off passes. But, I mean, guys like that don't grow on trees.
So, no, there was the generation prior, the Teddy Bruschis, the Brian Urlachers, the Zach Thomases.
And those guys made their bones stopping the run when the NFL was a little bit different. When if you had a dominant running back, you were kind of set up for success. And if you had the linebacker who's going to plug the hole and your running game, your run defense is going to stop that dominant running back, then you know what? Then you'll be fine.
Right.
But that's not the NFL today.
No, it's more pass, get after the passer and do it in a dime set or a nickel set. I think if every team could keep 5 DBs or 6 DBs on the field at all times, so get after the quarterback, they would. Which kind of renders you without a inside linebacker, or maybe one that just kind of is like a rover in the middle, or he's out in pass coverage. I don't know.
So I think if Miles Jack falls to 27, where the Packers will be picking in the first round, barring any type of trade, I think they would pull the trigger. And they would probably, to me, that one would feel like the Clinton Dix pick. And by that I mean position, yes, of need. Position that's been an issue for a while. We've tried to address it a number of ways. He's so obviously the best player at it. You could probably plug him in right away, and he would be serviceable, if not better than that. And he just falls into our lap. But I don't think that's going to happen. And I think if they don't trade up, I don't really see Miles Jack being there, again, for the same reason that we can't name a lot of other guys at that position who are stars because they don't grow on trees, right? Like C.J. Mosley, who the Ravens took a couple years ago in the same draft that the Packers ended up taking Clinton Dix, was one of them. And look how early he went off the board way before the Packers had a chance to even take him.
Yeah.
So to me, inside linebacker, not happening. I see what you're doing there. There is one other impact inside linebacker.
Yeah, and he's a crazy person.
His punt is perfect. I'm telling you, he stands out at a position that's hard to stand out. And even if he weren't a crazy person, he would still stand out at a position where it's hard to stand out.
I know.
Which is why they're just going to keep employing him. They don't care. We'll take the 15-yard penalty.
We'll take the 3-game suspension at the beginning of the season. That's not as ideal, but
yeah, but if you're going to pick off, you know, a pass that should win the playoff game for us that year, then we'll put up with that. Anyway, I took the long way there, but I agree with you. Okay. My hot take quarterly. The Packers need and will take a receiver with their first selection, whether it be trading down.
Okay.
And I love the idea of them going into training camp with Jordy Nelson lined up as their primary receiver, Randall Cobb, and then everything else is up for grabs. Like a couple years ago when Joe Witt said no one's guaranteed anything, when they had Tremont Williams and they had Sam Shields and they had all these guys and they had young guys behind them, and they said everyone's playing for their position right now. That's the situation at wide receiver. And because, you know, Laquon Treadwell is like supposed to be the first guy off the board out of Ole Miss, maybe a top 10, top 15 pick, and then there's all these other guys that we don't really know how NFL teams feel about,
yeah,
there's going to be good receivers available there. I love Josh Doctson out of TCU. He's a
speed machine.
He can put on a clinic when it comes to catching the, like, going up over people to catch the football and just, like, tracking the long ball. Like, the Packers don't have a guy like that. mainly because they don't draft guys like that, because they don't draft receivers very early in the draft oftentimes. I think they need it, and I think there's some credence to the we've rested on, you know, on our laurels too much with Aaron Rodgers, expecting him to carry anyone and everyone with him, and now it's time to reward him with serious investments in weapons. And I know that they paid Jordy Nelson and they paid Randall Cobb, but I'm talking investments that Ted Thompson sees as big investments, and that's draft picks, because we can dish out the money when you've got all the cap space and they're front-loaded contracts that after 2 years are inconsequential anyway. The real investment is 4 years, 5 years, and a first-round pick that's going to be an impact playmaker, and I think there are some of those guys to be had. Maybe even in round two. I love Sterling Shepard out of Oklahoma, but there's guys to be had, and they are going to do it. I'm telling you now, they're going to sit there. You said we need on defense, okay. Front seven, this, that, and the other. They're going to step outside of themselves and draft the skill position guy.
I want you to have this hot receiver. I want you to have this hot take because you're so much more passionate about it than I am.
Sure. I mean, I believe that this almost this entire year, because here's my rationale. So training camp day one next year, if they don't draft a receiver, Randall Cobb, Jordy Nelson, and we haven't even seen Ty Montgomery. Devontae Adams needs to earn the third receiver position. I still don't think, after all this, Jeff Janis or Jared Aberderis are good enough to have that position. Are those the only
number
guys
three
that
position?
You have? No. Those are the only guys you have under contract. So it's Ty Montgomery's job for the taking, basically, and Devontae Adams is going to have to play his way back into the good graces of everybody. But if they draft someone in the first...
Which he won't.
If they draft someone in the first round, that guy could immediately be their third target. Like, their third target.
Yes. Yeah.
And maybe even work his way up to the second. Because what if we had bad Randall Cobb again next year?
I don't believe it.
It's hard to think that with
Jordy Nelson makes Randall Cobb so much more elite. That's just how... I would have never predicted Jordy have the impact that he did on this offense and this receiving core.
God, yeah, I hope bad Randy's not a thing.
Okay, so let me elaborate on my take a little bit more. So I said they'll probably stay away from middle linebacker. I don't think they'll entirely stay away from middle linebacker. They'll probably feel someone out. They went Jake Ryan in the fourth round last year, I believe. But my take, and I'm actually going to go, this might be a quarter three take, but I think Matthews ends up back inside. I don't think that it makes sense for him to be outside. And granted, he gets after the passer, and McCarthy said that's his natural position, but remember how impactful he was right when the move was made with the turnstile blitz?
Oh, yeah.
You love the turnstile blitz.
I do. Beyond that, I don't think he's... I didn't miss him that much outside.
Nor did I, especially when you've got guys like Mike Neal and Nick Perry making the impact that they were starting to make.
And you have an interior pass rush, because Mike Daniels is at least always going to...
And B.J. Raji will clog up holes or eat blockers for Daniels or for Clay Matthews to come up the middle. Look, if you've got Clay Matthews and Sam Barrington, pending he comes back and is, you know, in good shape or recovers well from his injury, or I guess if it's Jake Ryan or Joe Thomas, if he's inside or outside, whatever. That's not a bad linebacking core. It's not ideal. It's not great. There's no Luke Kuechly there. But why was McCarthy so gung ho about moving Clay back outside?
Maybe they felt they missed. I mean, again, this is the thing that's hard about it. You have to defer to them because they're the ones coaching. And they're the ones putting the scheme together, and they're the ones who know more, right? They know an insane amount more. But I also think that at outside linebacker, like, Clay has to be a little more disciplined and has to be, like, have a better skill set than just chasing the ball. Like, there's something about him at inside linebacker where you tell him, like, you know, just – seek and destroy. Like, he's more of just like a flow to the ball kind of guy, and I think that's his greatest strength.
I know, kind of
is
just
be
like
a crazy person,
the primitive, like, just seek, like, and kill,
yeah,
type,
like,
mentality.
Line up off the line of scrimmage, like, where you can see over the line and not basically have to have some gap discipline, sure, but not maintain an edge.
Yeah,
and
the
instead
contain,
just be the guy
what...
who, like, you know, literally, like, you know, sets, once the ball carrier is identified, just go.
All right, so you agree with me here. That, or maybe not that he will end up there, but that he should end up there.
I, you know what? I don't have I'm not sitting there saying, oh, wow, that's so obvious. Yes. You know, great job. 1,000% the right move. Got to move him back outside, guys. It's so obvious to me because, you know, there's a catch-22 there. If you think that that's not an impact position, I think you're, like we were talking about, the counter-argument may be, well, that why'd they move Clay there? But if you think that that position, you know, is really important, then the counter-argument from me is, well, then why not have one of your best defensive players play it?
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
It's kind of like a no-brainer.
Yeah.
And the defense just improved so vastly when that move was made.
And isn't that why he got Peppers, too? Like, it... He was a part of the decision-making process. He had, for Clay to go inside, was that, you know what, well, at least we're not losing... You know, at least we still have some semblance of an edge rush because, you know, he still is, finds ways to be productive.
And I actually didn't even factor him into my... into my entire equation because he's 36 now.
Sure.
Who knows if he's back or effective or what.
They could take an edge rusher and then just like be like, sorry, Clay, we lied. You move him back inside.
I could see that happening.
Yeah. I mean, if that's
the best player available. It all depends on how the draft shakes out.
Yeah, certainly. All right, a couple quick hitters on the way out that we're going to get to. And then that's it for like game recap stuff, but we're still going to do this podcast. I'm sure we'll miss some weeks. There'll be some weeks where traveling is done or some weeks where there's just absolutely nothing going on. But we fully intend to try to make things interesting, dig deep into the draft. And really, this is the time where we just want to find interesting people to bring on
so our, that we can still generate. Our talent as podcasters will certainly be tested as we approach the nitty-gritty draft stuff. But I'll speak for Alex when I say we both really look forward to it. And, yeah, it's going to be fun. We might talk to Wes about Game of Thrones, which I still haven't started. But I will. I promise I will.
Yep, that's happening in April. Well, Game of Thrones premieres, the new season of Game of Thrones premieres the Sunday night after the NFL draft concludes on a Saturday. So you damn right we're going to have him on.
Should we watch the Royal Rumble? You have no interest in watching the Royal Rumble, do you?
When is that?
On Sunday.
This Sunday?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah!
It's like, isn't there an award show on you? Aren't the all-white Oscars on? No, that's like not for another couple of weeks.
All-white Oscars. That's, yeah. That was nice. Yeah, we'll infuse a little more pop culture and have some fun. But, all right, what are the quick hitters?
Simple yes or no's with maybe a bit of a elaboration because... then we'll try to keep this not too long of a podcast. Aaron Rodgers' window is closing.
No.
Any elaboration from you?
That's just dumb. He's 31 years old. He had a down season. Every great quarterback to date has had a down season. Manning had a down season all season this year. But that's also because he's 100. It was one of the years with the Colts. He's 4 head is 3 times the size it was when he started.
Can you blame him for taking HGH? Like, no. Can you really blame Peyton Manning
for
taking HGH, man? Like, he is almost as old as the guys in the testosterone, the natural quote unquote testosterone commercials who have the gray hair but a 6-pack. Like, he's almost their age and he's still getting hit by JJ Watt. Like,
getting crushed.
Jesus,
all right,
man.
So, like Tom Brady had one of those seasons in 2000, after one of the Super Bowls, I believe. Peyton Manning had one of those seasons with the Colts. And Aaron Rodgers just didn't have weapons. And granted, their offensive line rated out still pretty well because their anchors in the middle, the TJ Langs and the Josh Sittons and Corey Linsley, when he wasn't hurt, they maintained at least the center of the defense, but you still had Don Barclay on the edge sometimes when Bakhtiari was hurt, and Bakhtiari didn't play all that well either, and Bulaga was hurt for a good part. Like, Josh Walker, they tried out Josh Walker at one point this year. So, I know, it's silly. No, Rodgers' window's not closing. He's still in his prime. He may be on the tail end of his prime, but he's still in his prime, and you put a good team around him.
Yeah.
Not to say the Packers weren't a... They were not a bad team this year. They just were lacking serious weapons and were kind of they were just like a team without an identity this year.
Yeah.
Give them an identity and Aaron Rodgers will win you a Super Bowl. So, no.
Okay. I also go no. It has a lot to do about like the state of the organization too, not just his health or anything. But let's just say he plays a 38. So he's got six more cracks at this. How many of those years do you think, at least, let's not even say they win the Super Bowl or anything. Well,
is
the final
31 or 32?
I think he's 32.
Okay.
How many of those years will end with the last game having been played a postseason game? I'm willing to bet like five of them. Like, really, I am.
I don't see the Packers not making the playoffs any season.
And I know that that's like, oh, well, you're being naive. It's hard to make the playoffs. But, I mean, they've been doing it every year with McCarthy.
They're still in the NFC North. Are the Lions getting any better next year? Are the
thing.
Bears like, getting any better next year?
There is parity in this league. But parity with the great quarterbacks. I mean, for God's sake, Peyton Manning is starting the NFC or AFC Championship game this weekend.
Maybe.
Against Tom Brady. And, you know, who am I to say? As Carson Palmer's 36 and playing some of the best football of his life, probably the best football of his career, that Aaron Rodgers won't be doing that. Especially when you have, stability and really good people around you. I think that this year is a little eye-opening. Maybe they'll start to lean a little bit more on the supporting cast offensively and not just say, well, we could trot Aaron out there with whoever, and we trust these guys to develop year to year. But I think the window's still there, and I think it's still there. You know, he could be – like, look at John Elway. Like, I don't think we were doing this type of analysis, like, back then, but is the window closed? Maybe we were. I was way too young to know, but maybe, like, guys were going on the radio in Denver saying, like, oh, Elway's window's closing, and he gets two on the way out, like, in the twilight of his career. What, you know, like, Aaron Rodgers is going to have a few more cracks at it, and who's to say he doesn't win at a higher percentage than he already has and get –
feels weird that we're having this conversation right now. Doesn't it still kind of feel like Aaron Rodgers, the young gunslinger who's like...
Well, I mean, we were probably having this conversation with Brett Favre for 8 years. You know?
Well,
so it's like...
Brett Favre also retired 35 times.
I know, but what I'm saying is like we're still... It's still early. Like it's still pretty early. And also, you know, I think beyond that, if you're talking about just the amount of years left playing, let alone at your prime, I mean...
Rodgers said he wanted to play till 40.
It's a different game. You can't touch quarterbacks now. Like yeah. Guys aren't getting concussions at quarterback at the rate that they were with Troy Aikman and Steve Young.
It's a miracle. How many concussions did he say he absorbed?
Like 1,000.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm saying like that's not the way the league is anymore. Like soon you're not going to be able to hit the quarterback almost at all. Like soon
you're not going to be able to hit anybody at all.
Well, I mean, and you know what? That might not be the dumb move, but I don't think the window is closing. All right, last two. Most disappointing Packer of 2015. Is it Eddie Lacy?
I say Davante Adams.
Dude, I agree. That was going to be mine.
Sorry.
I tried to lead you towards Eddie Lacy. Yes.
I had no idea. You didn't prep me for that in pre-show.
But I'm also disappointed in everyone's expectations, though, because I think we got a little too excited, right?
Yeah, we've talked
about still, though, but still, like, he looked at times, and I hate to use this word because it's like so harsh and it's not what I mean by it. And he's still a gifted athlete, but a little hopeless. Like, it just was like
he looked scared, didn't he?
I mean,
kind of. He looked like the route will forever be burned into my brain on that interception that Rodgers threw.
Oh, yeah.
Who were they playing? I remember the route. I don't remember anything else, but
yeah.
I say it was burning in my brain, but apparently it wasn't. I just remember that interception that totally was not Aaron's fault. And not being an Aaron Rodgers apologist, but it was Davante Adams just didn't even effort at all. And after that point, I'm like, this guy doesn't even want to be on the field.
Yeah.
And then he comes out and makes like some like good like Davante Adams-esque catches, or at least what we thought he was, the preseason MVP, the guy who had the best week of practice going into the Redskins game, and actually had an okay game against the Redskins. He was just a total and complete disappointment.
Yeah.
Eddie Lacy, maybe, but he showed flashes of greatness, too, and I still kind of feel bad for Eddie. I don't feel bad for Davante.
Yeah, it was a lack of consistency with Lacy, which was really, really, really... you know, disappointing, but not the most disappointing Packer. There's, to me, it's like just the way everything's set up for Adams to kind of step up and be that guy was, you're really disappointed that not only are you like iffy about him going into next year, but now you're doubting him like more than you did coming into year two. You're instead of being like, well, you know what, I really hope Devontae Adams could fill that role, you're saying, I really hope it doesn't come down to Devontae going into that role. So, yeah. And then finally, most surprising Packer of 2015. Pleasantly surprised, because they have a lot of young guys playing a lot of important positions. And
yeah,
a lot of them played really, really well.
Yeah. I'm going to say Demaryius Randle. I hope I didn't steal yours.
I mean, whatever. Yeah, let's talk about him. He deserves it.
Did I steal yours?
Sort of, but I think most people would say that in general.
Yeah, so he was a first round pick who, like, obviously there are expectations that come with a first round pick.
But for some reason, like, he was so low key first round pick.
It was awesome, and that's kind of what I was trying. That's what I was alluding to. He switched positions. He was a safety in college, and then all of a sudden he's a boundary corner and played really well. There were a couple of moments where his technique was a little off, or he got a little banged around. But he played really well and had consistently graded well on Pro Football Focus. And if it weren't for a fluke of a catch against the Cardinals, like, he played textbook defense, mm-hmm. and was always in position and was a sure tackler. Aside from, you know, some rookie woes, I thought he played incredible and gives you a lot of promise for what the secondary is going to look like next year and years to come.
Yeah, so to not be too repetitive and harp on just him, because I think he probably is everyone's pleasant surprise for the most. I mean, there's other guys. I mean, B.J. Raji, you could argue, was a
good little return year for him.
Yeah, but that secondary as a whole, it's really hard not to get super excited about them, because you almost forgot watching the games this year how young they are. That and not just young, but just like. Did you read the Wall Street Journal piece?
Mm-hmm.
How good was that? Like, it was just like, it was like a kind of a short thing you read, and it really makes you think. Like, Sam Shields played wide receiver for 3 years in college.
Yeah.
Okay, so he comes in the NFL very raw. Demaryius Randle played safety, returned kicks. He did, like, all these different things. He was never, like, a true corner.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these guys are probably, like, going into training camp, having to learn technique that some, like, guys who play corner since high school and... you know, play at a Division I level in college, like, have known for years and years and years. Quentin Rollins, basketball 3 years. 1 year of football, corner. Pretty good, pretty productive. Like,
he had two interception games. He had sharp tackles.
Yeah, so if you don't know what we're talking about, go Google it. Like, it's the Wall Street Journal. It's talking about the Packers promoting from within. And they talked to Joe Witt, his cornerbacks coach for the Packers. And he kind of just points out something that, like, I never really stopped and thought about. They almost on purpose like their corners and some of their guys to know nothing better, to not have gone anywhere else to develop habits that other
right.
people breed in you, to come in, and the only way you're going to know is the way that Joe Witt is coaching you, if it's the corner in particular, and the only, or, you know, Darren Perry, if you're a safe, whatever. Have these raw guys who were drafted, but they just, it's almost like a positive brainwashing, you know, like, you're just a young, naive person, and we could, you're so impressionable, we could teach you anything, and all you're ever going to know is our way. And it's hard to argue that a few years from now, if they keep most of these guys, they're not going to have a really good, still young, in its prime secondary. Clinton Dix is about to be one of the best, I think, safeties in the NFL. Definitely one of the best players on this defense. Morgan Burnett's been great. Their corners have been great.
Everybody complements each other so well. And how much can be said about what Joe Witt and Darren Perry have done?
They've been amazing, I think.
Like, I think they have, too.
They're outstanding coaches. Well, I know some people say that Darren Perry is, like, head coach material.
Yeah.
That, like, if they were to have a defensive coordinator, don't forget, he's part of the Dick LeBeau, as an extension of Dick LeBeau, Dom Capers, like, group. He's part of that tree. So, like,
you could say
if the Packers would promote from within, if, let's say, if Dom just retired, that Darren Perry might be the guy to be the coordinator. Yeah,
and
he played in it, and
he used to have to deal with Jerron McMillan and M.D. Jennings. What, like, let's see what he has done with Morgan Burnett when he's got a good compliment for him. And then Joe Witt, who's coaching two at one, and a lot of times during the season, his two boundary corners were first year players who didn't play defensive back or cornerback when they were in college.
Yep.
It's crazy.
Yeah. It's really exciting. That's probably the most pleasant surprise.
You and I have loved this defense all year.
Oh, I have. And a huge part of it's the secondary. I mean, so often we just used to see them just get broken, just busted coverages, big plays, guys pointing at each other, like no one knowing what's going on. And now it's like, right. You know, you have more of those third downs where you just, someone breaks up a pass over the middle in perfect coverage and you just say, wow, like, you know, like now that we went so long without that, we appreciate that. It's so cool. Casey Hayward's gone, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
probably. Maybe not. I mean, if they wouldn't have given Sam Shields all that money.
It's just, I don't even know how much money he'll require, but, like, you're going to start Shields and Randall.
Yeah.
So Casey Hayward basically either has to be your third corner or maybe go somewhere else where he can be more than that. And he's also replaceable because I think Quentin Rollins is going to be a pretty good player. And he's also kind of physical, so at the nickel corner position, like...
Casey Hayward didn't have a terrible year, though.
No, I'm not saying he's bad.
And I agree that they probably invest in Quentin Rollins.
Like, wrong place, wrong time,
had,
you know? Like,
imagine if they had all four of those guys again next year.
It'd be awesome.
And I always subscribe to the notion that somebody's going to get hurt.
Yeah, you're right. It's always better to have a whole bunch of them, but then, you know, if he wants to get paid or if he wants to go somewhere where he could play more of a boundary corner role or just be like one of the top two, then who knows? But anyway, that's way out in front. All right. Let's get up out of this piece.
What should we talk about next week?
We'll figure something out. I'm sure there's plenty more to go down. Something interesting is going to happen on Sunday.
If anyone has suggestions, at Nick Bornheimer on the Twitter, at Alex Patakis, we're open to anything.
We always are. Yes. Open to feedback, suggestions, questions, whatever it might be. We'll work with some guests as well. It's going to be it'll be a fun off season. You know, I don't go into it hating everything like I did last year.
I agree.
Definitely go into it looking at the roster, thinking there's got to be significant improvements in places. And it's fun to you know, kind of speculate as to what those improvements will be. So anyway, that'll do it for us. Thanks again, people at PackersTalk.com for allowing us to do this and for you for having listened. We'll catch you next week. The Two-Pack. We in the crowd screaming out football back. It's kickoff time. We in love with the money. These chickens all on the sidelines. Chevy, it is my highness.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers. Yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.